It's time for Mind Your Business on 710 WOR and the iHeartRadio Network to present the weekly business radio show produced by the award-winning marketing firm Bottom Line Marketing Group, BLMG, sharing business and marketing strategies to make you and your business successful. Now, here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis.
Yeah, thank you for joining me here on another edition of Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saflis, broadcasting at 10 p.m. on Sunday nights in the New York, New Jersey metro area, right here on 710 WOR, and throughout America on the powerful iHeart Radio Network. Thank you, New York. Yes, it's exciting to say this. The Nielsen ratings have us back in the top 10 in New York AM radio. How exciting is that? And it always helps to have great guests. And tonight we're going to have Mike McIntyre, a dear friend, Senior Vice President of Director of Business and Government Banking at Investors Bank, along with Richard Goldstein, Senior Principal at Burden LLP, John Fitzgerald, Audit Partner at Burden LLP, Veronique Horn, Senior Principal at Burden LLP, and Naya Perlman, Tax Partner at Burden LLP. A little bit of background about tonight's show brought to you by Investors Bank and Burden. About Investors Bank, Investors headquarters in Short Hills, New Jersey, is a full-service commercial bank that has been servicing customers since 1926. With over $27 billion in assets and a network of more than 150 retail branches throughout the tri-state area here, Investors Bank delivers personalized services and products tailored to the needs of its customers, businesses, and customers alike. About Burden, Burden founded in 1917, wow, over a century. And Investors Bank is about to, again, they're around since 26, so they're about to celebrate their big centennial in a couple of years. Burden, founded in 1917, is consistently ranked among the nation's top accounting and advisory firms. With more than 400 professionals in its staff, Burden services include accounting, tax, financial, and management advisory services. We always open with some thank you. Special thank you to the great team here at Bottom Line Marketing Group, BLMG, and to the folks at 710 WOR, and at Investors Bank, Jason Bachrach, Mike Giacobello, Cassia Birelli, and at Burden, Frank Vitale, Matt Greco. Tonight's show, we're going to discuss a number of very critical aspects that have to do with financial matters. And, of course, our content always is there to benefit all the businesses out there, small to medium-sized businesses. Post-crisis, right? Thank God we're hopefully near the end of the pandemic. What are the critical steps that businesses need to think about now? We're going to talk about PPP forgiveness, what an important topic that is, and the state and local taxes that are currently affecting businesses. Before I turn to Mike, just an important reminder. Tonight's show was recorded during the week of Wednesday the 26th. This is important for all those that are tuned in now. And for those listening on Spotify, some people may be listening to this in 2022, 2023. We just want to mention that this was recorded during the week of Wednesday, May 26th. And the federal government is constantly tweaking the details on an ongoing basis. And therefore, please make sure to get the latest up-to-date information when making your decisions. Also, although the experts on tonight's program are sharing important guidelines about state and local taxes and the PPP, nevertheless, contact your particular accountant, lawyer, and financial advisor for specific guidance as it relates to your business. We open the show by turning to Mike McIntyre. Mike, thank you for joining me here once again on Mind Your Business. Whenever you're on, my ratings go up. So we told the team here, get Mike back.
I got a face for radio, Yitzhak.
You certainly do.
Thanks for having me on.
And the YouTube as well. So
thanks for having me on.
Mike, how has business banking changed as companies now begin? You know. By the way, as I ask this question, it's really rewarding. Because a year ago when we were talking, and as COVID, affected both of us in so many different ways, we were asking at the time, how have businesses adapted? And you shared advice then. But now, thank God, we're able to ask this question. The current environment is returning to a sense of normalcy. What are you seeing on the front lines as this is all happening, thank God?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you and I have talked about this, gosh, now over the last year and change, yeah. Right? And I keep talking about the term evolution, right? You know, we've seen so many of our businesses, you know, in order to survive, evolve in very quick and meaningful ways, you know, whether they're delivering through through online channels or they're doing things, you know, digitally or mobily, you know, businesses did whatever they had to do to survive. And the word I'm seeing now or what I'm seeing now from talking to customers and to folks like the team over at Burden is you're starting to see some really meaningful success too, right? So we've come through obviously the pandemic and as the tri-state area reopens in a very rapid now and meaningful way, it seems like every day there's a new reduction or you know, relaxing of laws, you're seeing businesses return to near normal. You know, I'm on the subway a couple of days a week. You know, I'm getting a seat, but you know, the trains are definitely more crowded. I'm able to get some lunch now in real time, and you know, in the city, or get some takeout in New Jersey, and that's good. That's a good sign. But I will tell you though, there are certain things that I think have really become a mainstay, which is, you know, the embrace of digital and mobile in so many different facets now of how a business owner is going to run and maintain their business going forward. You're going to hear later on, I'm sure, about some of the requirements for PPP and forgiveness. And one of the big things that's coming out of it is really having strong record keeping, right? And some of the best ways to do that are to have many of your receipts and records and documents in digital ways, right? Whether it be payroll. So a lot of companies have really looked to embrace digital ways of modernizing their payroll solutions. Payments, people taking payments online through the various payment processors. I had the opportunity to have lunch this past week with a very well-known payment company, and they've never been busier. If you go to a point of sale location in a store, you're seeing many companies upgrading how they're taking payments from their customers and from their vendors. And so that's not going to go back, right? The reductions of friction that have taken place in business over the last year, and as people have strived to survive and maintain their business, really, we're pivoting now to growth again. And, you know, you're seeing the numbers, you know, nationally, you're seeing the numbers here in the Northeast. As we continue to relax restrictions and get more back to normal, I think the growth's going to continue.
Mike, what is Investors Bank forecasting in terms of growth as it relates to business lending during the second half of 2021?
Sure. So I can tell you what I'm seeing from our customers. I can't really speak to, you know, what we're going to forecast now because obviously we're still digesting the various programs that are out there, right? So, you know, PPP just ended literally today, right? It's ending today on the 31st at the end of May. You know, there's going to be other loan programs that take precedent over the next couple of months. The economic injury and disaster loans, those are still out there to support, you know, many of our small businesses and medium-sized businesses. But I will tell you, though, that demand is very strong. Our volumes have already exceeded what we did last year in terms of organic lending to our customers. Every customer that I'm talking to, and I'm speaking to my bankers, you know, on a daily basis and prospects and various customers and talking to the likes of folks over at Burden, tremendous restocking of companies, you know, whether it's restocking their inventory or putting more sales in the street in the form of receivables. We're seeing very strong demand for receivable financing to finance sales. We're seeing very strong demand to recapture inventory that's been spent down and been, you know, been wound down over the last year. We're seeing quite a bit of construction happening. I mean, you can't drive around anywhere here in the tri-state area without seeing something being built or being constructed. I'm working on a transaction now for a construction project that's been, you know, a couple years paused that's about to, you know, to restart. But I got to tell you, you know, the most important thing for us right now is just continuing to provide advice and counsel and looking to meet the needs of our customers. The needs are extraordinary right now in terms of as we've reopened, how businesses are trying to pivot and take advantage of these opportunities. You know, growth remains strong across many of the sectors that we support here in the market. And as we look to the summer, I expect our volumes for credit to remain extremely strong, both across, you know, the small business space and in the middle market space. And I'm really looking forward to as we start see some of these other government programs wind down, really turning back to how we can expand the balance sheet in a truly meaningful way for the bank.
Now, you just addressed how businesses are, to a certain degree, even like scrambling you know, to, I mean, the Wall Street Journal had a story recently about how rental cars are scarce. People are flying out to do business in different cities, and it's hard to get a rental car because they sold off a large percentage of their assets during the pandemic because there weren't people flying. What are some additional steps, although you addressed this, but what are some additional steps that Investors Bank is taking to assist small business and corporate clients?
Yeah, I mean, we can only do so much, right? We are as busy as we can be. My bankers are out there on the street you know, trying to help our customers and our communities. But, you know, one of the things that we have not forgotten as a firm, and, you know, we're very well known to be deeply engaged in the communities that we serve. You know, over the last month, I've had the opportunity to do some really meaningful work with two of your former guests, you know, Paul Quintero of Ascendus, a great New York-based CDFI, you know, that's doing God's work. He's helping small businesses and startups in low to moderate income areas, you know, get their first sources of funding. And we've been a great partner of Paul's, and he's been a great, you know, partner of ours. You know, we're continuing to work with our community development financial institutions. We continue to invest heavily in those groups because they're doing great work, you know, grassroots efforts. You know, we continue to work very closely with chambers of commerce throughout New Jersey and New York. I had the opportunity to spend time 2 weeks ago with John Harmon, a former guest of our show that we did back in the early part of the year, talking about how we can do, you know, a better job in continuing to support, you know, the African American Chamber of Commerce for New Jersey, right? And these are all things that, you know, have always been there, but as we're reopening, there is just so much to get done, and there's so many meetings to have or customer needs or community needs that we're doing as much as we can, as quickly as we can.
Mike, although you mentioned, and it's true, of course, you know, whatever businesses are doing is their issue, but of course, the relationship with the bank is key for so many reasons. You know, whether their transactions are set up, whether it's their lending needs, and even just a you know, a shoulder to lean on. You know, Investors Bank is known for that. Everyone at the bank is so approachable, and you know, I'm not going to ask you how important that is. That's just too obvious. But, you know, coming out of the pandemic, how do you see small businesses, you know, their approach in terms of investing in new technology, new equipment, upgrades, hiring, inventory, all that, which as the economy is roaring back, is so important.
Yeah.
You know, what do you see?
Some other economists and analysts have said that, you know, this has been a spring that's about to spring, you know, to sprung, or a spring that's going to expand, you know, in a meaningful way. You see it in things like the chip shortage that the U.S. is facing right now. Right, there's demand
for beyond auto.
Yeah, it's beyond auto, and there's just demand for new technologies, and you know, many of the things that we're doing on the mobile side or on the payment side, you know, there are chips involved and other types of, you know, cutting edge technology. But I can tell you that I think it's been very evident to, you know, every industry from a dry cleaners on up, is that the ways of doing business have evolved in the last 14 months. And I really think they're going to evolve even further and faster, you know, this year and next year as people expect to transact in different ways. People expect to have responses and decisions on whether it be credit or banking relationships or needs done in a much more quicker way, in a much more faster way. And also just the ongoing embrace of hybrid, you know, whether it be mobile engagement, personal engagement, like, you know, in person, or a combination of all of that with, you know, overlaid with opportunities to do telepresence and telemeetings. Whenever I'm talking to a customer, my first default right now is to encourage an in-person meeting. If that doesn't take place, fine. We can do a virtual meeting, and that hopefully works. But I will tell you that as we look to do fulfillment and really become that true advisor to our customers, that advisor to the community, that really, you know, dependable organization that is really, you know, invested in all of our communities, we're going to deliver that with the best people that we have. And that really, for me, as I look to the remainder of this year, I mean, we're already halfway through this year. It's extraordinary. But you know, our success will continue to be driven by our people.
It's so rewarding to hear Mike McIntyre talk like this, because it was a short year ago, or maybe a long year ago, when we were just, it was from surviving, and now we're talking about thriving. We're going to take a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll be speaking with John Fitzgerald, audit partner at Burden LLP, along with Richard Goldstein, senior principal at Burden LLP. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
The future that you envision for yourself and your business is totally attainable. You need support along the way. And as entrepreneurs, having a team around you that supports you in achieving what that vision is vital. And that is something that the Covenant Group is committed to delivering.
Most of the times that people come to the Covenant Group, usually it's that they want to enjoy what they're doing, they want to have more quality time, or they want to have financial independence or financial security. My name is Keita Deming.
I'm Norm Traynor.
We educate and coach entrepreneurs
to build a high-performance business.
We are, in essence, design engineers, and we're helping entrepreneurs design the business that's right for them and then execute.
The idea of having somebody coach you through the hard times in the business and think through what it is to have an inventory of client activity and what it is to build a base of revenue and to think like a business person, it's just not common in our industry.
My name is Mark Parton.
I'm Dean Harder.
I'm Alvin Brown.
I'm Jay Langford.
My name is Luc Godet.
I'm Andrew McKinnon, and I'm building a high-performance business.
And I'm building a high-performance business.
And I'm building a high-performance business.
Building a high-performance business.
Learn more by visiting www.covenantgroup.com.
We're all in a rush these days. We're running to meetings, to finish a project. When do we have time to educate ourselves? Enter Business Class, the free daily 60-second video clip featuring advice from C-level executives and business giants such as Beth Comstock, Jeffrey Hazlett, Joe Hart, Shep Hyken, and many more. Follow us on Instagram at Business Class Clips. That's at Business Class Clips on Instagram. Or sign up for our WhatsApp daily broadcast by texting sign up to 718-594-6519 on WhatsApp. Get ready to get ahead.
And we're back. Mind your business here on 710 WOR and the iHeartRadio Network. The lineup, a very distinguished lineup. Mike McIntyre is here in studio, Senior Vice President, Director of Business and Government Banking at Investors Bank. Richard Goldstein, Senior Principal at Burden LLP. John Fitzgerald, Audit Partner at Burden LLP. Vernique Horn, Senior Principal at Burden, and Naya Perlman, Tax Partner at Burden. We now turn to John. John Fitzgerald, thank you for joining me here on Mind Your Business.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
All right. I was told I could ask you anything. So,
of course.
Here goes. You know, throughout 2020, we all heard everyone speaking about the PPP process and you know, forgiveness, of course, which every business was looking out for. But outside of how, you know, to apply for the loan and to apply for forgiveness and then receive it, of course, we didn't hear much about how these funds and the forgiveness of them should be reported on financial statements. So my question is, you know, what challenges did businesses face this year with regards to reporting all that, you know, the PPP funds and the various different funding that the government had graciously given out, but in terms of reporting, how did they handle that?
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, obviously early, the biggest challenge was simply the unknown. Yeah. We all had to wait for guidance from the government as well as the policymakers to figure out the best way to treat that. For financial statements prepared on a GAAP basis for profit entities, the guidance allowed a couple of options. If the PPP loan was still outstanding at the end of the year, at December 31st, 2020, the loan was primarily recorded as a liability on the company's balance sheet and broken out between the current portion, which is the amount due within 12 months, as well as the long-term portion. For GAAP purposes, if the loan was forgiven prior to December 31st, it was then recorded as income on the company's income statement and classified as extinguishment of debt. But it's important to make a distinction here, because this was different than the tax treatment, which we really heard a lot about. The tax treatment was that the PPP loan was tax exempt. And there was a lot of different issues going on about that, but that didn't get cleaned up until very close to the end of the year. And that was an important benefit for small business owners, not having to pick up that income. And just from, there's one other tweak to this from a financial statement standpoint, There's also an option on non-forgiven loans under the international accounting standards, which allows an entity to record forgiveness in the current year, even if the loan has not been forgiven yet, if the entity has a reasonable assurance that it will be forgiven. So that's just another add-on that you have to deal with.
I turn to Mike McIntyre here in studio.
John, this is a really difficult topic because it's one that I'm seeing a lot of different types of financial statements being shared with me now as 2020 numbers are starting to come out, and as we get into 2021, we're seeing clients that have multiple PPP loans, one that was made in 2020 and then one that was done in 2021. And it appears that we're likely going to have customers that are going to have loans that bleed into perhaps 2022 as well. So you're now talking about, a couple of years of financial statements that are going to show these liabilities on there. As we start to look at forgiveness, right, you have the first tranche of loans where customers and business owners can apply for their forgiveness. We're wrapping up now the second round of PPP, which is going to expire on the 31st, which just expired last week. What kind of challenges are your clients facing in terms of getting their forgiveness applications put in? And do you see much of this bleeding into 2022?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of challenges. One, how the SBA kind of rolled this out. It was kind of brought onto the banks very quickly. The banks didn't have the proper plan in place to deal with such a onslaught of lending. So the internal facilities weren't set up to handle the volume of loans that needed to be processed. And we're seeing that there's still certain banks that aren't able to handle forgiveness applications at certain levels, and it's just starting to get cleaned up now. I definitely think it's going to be, leaked into 2022. We're seeing that, the forgiveness process is cumbersome. There is a lot of paperwork that's required. There's a lot of information related to payroll, as well as proof of your headcount. And all these things have to be downloaded into different types of portals, depending upon how the bank is processing that information. So some of our clients have needed a little bit of guidance there, where we can kind of go in and help them analyze their application to make sure that it's hitting the appropriate parameters to make sure that it would be processed by that bank. So we've been working very closely with our clients to make sure that the completeness requirements of the SBA are met. Additionally, loans that are in excess of $2 million, as you know, require a company to fill out a loan necessity application, which is a Form 3509. And that's really where the SBA comes in and audits that client, because the loan was in excess of $2 million. And there's a series of questions on that form that require the clients to actually put narratives in. So we've been working with our clients as well to assist them and make sure we review those applications to make sure that they're sound and that they're completed properly with their guidance.
We're speaking with John Fitzgerald, audit partner at Burden LLP. John, we've all been hearing issues about businesses that are having issues with covenants. How are you addressing these issues on the customers' balance sheets?
Yeah, so many banks, when they have an existing credit facility, They have a covenant as part of their loan facility that prohibits their customer from taking on additional debt. And with many of the PPP loans, because there was a race to go get this money, many clients went to their primary bank, and the primary bank may not have been set up initially to be able to fund the loan. So they went to other banks that they may have had relationships with, or who were advertising that they were able to lend PPP funds. What happened then was they took on debt from other facilities outside of their existing credit facility, and which could have a technical, trigger on a debt covenant where they took on debt that they weren't technically allowed to. So, we've been advising our clients to really look into that, to work with their current bank to obtain waivers, and not spring it on their current bank at the last minute, because nobody likes surprises when it's coming down to a reporting period, and now there's a covenant waiver needed, on an April 30th, when financials due April 30th, and you're coming to the bank on April 29th. So we try to get in front of that with our clients and make sure they understood that potential issue.
John, just before we let you go, a question. We're now in the middle. I mean, this is being recorded in the middle of 2021. What are your recommendations for what a business should be thinking of, you know, best practices and what they should be doing now in order to make sure that they're prepared for the 2021 end of year, of course, beginning of 2022 filing?
Yeah, I think it's important for them to work with their payroll company to make sure they're generating the proper reports. Because there's a lot of different programs out there, whether it's the employee retention credit or the PPP loan, that have varying reporting issues. And you want to make sure that you're working with your payroll company to document the right covered period under the PPP loan, as well as you want to make sure you're keeping the right headcount documentation, as well as your other expenses that are required for utilities, et cetera, that will be qualified, that will help you qualify for forgiveness when you apply.
And John, I would imagine reporting is record keeping. Good record keeping is just always good best practice.
100%. I mean, it's always easier to do things on a contemporaneous basis as opposed to go back and trying to rebuild the file after the fact.
Thank you, John. John Fitzgerald, audit partner at Burden. We now turn to Richard. Richard Goldstein, senior principal at Burden. Richard, thank you for joining us here on Mind Your Business.
Thank you for having me.
Richard, let's talk about some of the laws that were implemented recently in New York State and how, I mean, my question basically is, how has the pandemic impacted individuals and businesses from a state and local tax perspective? In particular, you know, changes were made to the New York State income tax rate. How does that affect the individuals that fall into the into these new brackets?
Well, in one word, how has the pandemic affected people, taxpayers here in New York? The one word I would say is profound or profoundly. Mm. So it is true there have been changes to the tax rates in New York State for personal income taxes. It used to be that the oldest high rate for a taxpayer in New York was 8.82%. And now with the new rates effective this year, joint taxpayers earning just over $2 million are going to see a 9.65% rate, and over $5 million, 10.3%, and $25 million, almost 11%. So those are significant increases. And it would be no surprise to think that some of these folks might be thinking about relocating. But I could come back to that in a little while. I'd like to talk about some other stuff that the pandemic has really changed the state and local tax world. And if you can imagine, compared to the federal world, at the state and local tax level, we have so many different types of taxes to contend with. And most of them have been affected in significantly. For example, like feds, we have withholding on income taxes, but it's done on a state-by-state basis. We have sales taxes. We have personal income taxes, corporate income taxes. When you take into consideration the telecommuting movement that's occurred, that impacts where a business needs to withhold, right? A lot of businesses perhaps haven't kept track exactly where their workers are. Maybe they're not withholding where they have workers and where they need to be withholding. So you sort of have to go back to ground zero and reexamine your whole business footprint. Where are you operating? Sales tax, right? So sales tax, not every state imposes one, but most of them do. And, the thing about sales tax is if you have an employee working in the state and you're selling services or you're selling goods that are taxable, you can have an obligation to collect those sales taxes. And normally sales taxes, right? You go to the store, you pay for something. Right. And as the consumer, you pay the tax. Right. And the business takes it and then hands it over to the government. Well, when that doesn't happen, and it's supposed to happen, basically what happens is that sales tax becomes the business's liability. Mm-hmm. So when you think about the size of transactions, the number of transactions, there's a potential liability that many businesses, particularly operating online, may not even be aware that, you know, they now have filing obligations in other states based on some of their workers no longer working in the office, where they usually do. And then as far as income tax goes, businesses pay income tax, right? Suddenly they also have employees working from home, right? In states where they've never filed returns, they've never had a reason to file a return. And again, so all these things now are, you know, you were on the precipice of discovering a whole new set of tax liabilities that people have not planned for and need to plan for. You know, it's interesting. It even affects where you're already filing, perhaps how many, how much income goes to a particular state, because sometimes where you have employees is used as a factor to determine how much a state might be entitled to get from you. And then on the individual side, right, this is really difficult. It's a real challenge for telecommuters themselves. There are a number of states like New York State that have something called the convenience of the employer, of the employee rule. Mm-hmm. What does it mean? What it means is that if I normally work in New York, and but now I'm working from Colorado, right? I got out of town for the pandemic, and I'm not coming back now because it's all telecommuting, right? New York has this rule that says, well, if you're working from home for your own convenience, right, you have to file a non-resident income tax return in New York, and your income while you're sitting at your desk in your home, right, working, maybe watching a little TV on the side, but mostly working, you have to allocate that. That goes to New York. And there are some solutions to prevent that. But can you imagine learning, you know, sitting in Colorado and finding out that or any other state that has a personal income tax, and finding out that that New York, you need to pay tax on 100% of your income to New York, and you have to pay tax to income tax to the state where you're sitting and doing your work. Wow. What's the solution to that? Right. The solution is you probably need to plan ahead. And then that leads into the employer, because the employer is obligated to withhold, usually obligated to withhold, to approximate the liability of the individual. And failure for a company in New York to withhold on this person sitting in Colorado, right, this employee sitting in Colorado, could result in a transfer of liability similar to the sales tax.
I'm going to turn to Mike McIntyre.
Richard, great to see you. You talked about relocation several times in your answer. You talked about states and residency. Let's talk about domicile, because this is another key word that everybody keeps talking about, given all these changes. What constitutes a domicile, and how does one change theirs?
Those are good questions, and they've always been important, but they're even more important today. So there's domicile, which is basically the place that everyone has one domicile. Everyone, you know, even if you're homeless, you have a domicile. It's the place that you return to when you don't have to be away, say, for business or for vacation. Or it's if you had to put it in a word, it's the home is where the heart is. It's really where your life is centered, grounded. And the states, particularly New York, they like to take a look at a couple of different things. They like to, if you have multiple houses, they'll look at those houses and they'll see how they're being used. Are they being used as a vacation home? Is the size of the house appropriate to the size of your family, such that it could be your domicile? They'll look at where you keep your what is called nearest and dearest possessions, you know, and that could be something like a wine collection, or it could be something that has no financial value. It could be your children's drawings, right? But they're dear to you. And so, you know, it's different for everybody. So they'll look at where those things are kept. They'll look at where you, how much time you spend relative to the different places where you have a home. They'll look at where the center of your business life is. and they'll look at, you know, your immediate family to see where they are. Those are the parts of the puzzle that all come together to try and make a determination of where you're domiciled. And so I remember a case where we were on the cusp of deciding whether or not this person was, you know, domiciled in New York or elsewhere. And the thing that pushed the auditors over the edge was where the taxpayer kept his dog. And so Fido was very important to the determination of the person's domicile. Now, I want to say that, you know, you can definitely plan, you can genuinely change your domicile, but you want to make it as easy as possible for the tax department to see it and agree with it. And because they're naturally skeptical and because they have a sort of a way of looking at things that's unique, you want to, even though you may have changed your domicile in your heart, you want to plan it in a way that makes it, if you will, speaking in the same language as the auditors. Now, there is one other thing that's really important here, and not you don't want to lose sight of, is that domicile is only half of the equation in a state like New York, where there's also something called statutory residency. And statutory residency is pretty easy to understand. If you have a residence in New York and you spend more than 183 days in New York, whether you even set foot in that residence or not is irrelevant. But if you have an apartment here in New York City and you come into New York City to go see a Broadway show, that counts as a day in New York. By the way, you could be not domiciled in New York, but you could be a statutory resident, and that can change from year to year depending on how many days you spend. So that's another thing folks need to plan around.
So, Richard, as we close out the segment, and again, great content as usual, and just another example of why the show is so popular. A lot of questions around pass-through entities and some of the impacts observed in the most recent budget. Can you touch on that briefly, please?
That it's really profound. In 2017, the federal government changed the rules on how and whether you could deduct on your federal income tax return, personal income tax return, the state and local taxes, the state and local tax deduction. So typically things like if you're here in New York, your New York State, New York City income taxes, your property taxes, right? Suddenly those became subject starting in 2018 to a $10,000 limitation. So you can't deduct more than $10,000. And so the issue was, how do we work around this? How do states like New York allow their taxpayers to recapture some of that lost deduction? And the way to do it is to pass what New York did, which is called the pass-through entity tax. And what that does is, one, it taxes the partnership at what are essentially personal income tax rates, right? And then it gives the individual partners in that partnership a credit based on their share of the partnership's tax, the pass-through entity. It's called a pass-through entity tax because a partnership, for example, or an S-corp is a pass-through entity and they pay the tax. So you get a credit for that, and you use that credit against your own personal income tax. So now you're not deducting state and local taxes as an itemized deduction on your federal income tax. Instead, those deductions are going to become business expenses that are deducted at the partnership's level. Therefore, you have less income subject to tax. So effectively, you get to escape through that $10,000 cap. New York isn't the only states that has done that, but it's a very important step, especially if the federal laws don't change and the $10,000 cap is not removed.
In this segment, we heard from Richard Goldstein, senior principal at Burden, and John Fitzgerald, audit partner. We're going to take a short commercial break, but when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Veronique Horn, senior principal at Burden, and Naya Perlman, tax partner at Burden. Stay tuned.
The future that you envision for yourself and your business is totally attainable. You need support along the way. And as entrepreneurs, having a team around you that supports you in achieving what that vision is vital. And that is something that the Covenant Group is committed to delivering.
Most of the times that people come to the Covenant Group, usually it's that they want to enjoy what they're doing, they want to have more quality time, or they want to have financial independence or financial security. My name is Keith Deming.
I'm Norm Traynor.
And we educate and coach entrepreneurs
to build a high-performance business.
We are, in essence, design engineers, and we're helping entrepreneurs design the business that's right for them and then execute.
The idea of having somebody coach you through the hard times in the business and think through what it is to have an inventory of client activity and what it is to build a base of revenue and to think like a business person, it's just not common in our industry.
My name is Mark Parton.
I'm Dean Harder.
I'm Alvin Brown.
I'm Jay Langford.
My name is Luke Godet.
I'm Andrew McKinnon, and I'm building a high-performance business.
And I'm building a high-performance business.
And I'm building a high-performance business.
Building a high-performance business.
Learn more by visiting www.covenantgroup.com.
And we're back. Mind Your Business with Yitzhak Saftlis right here on 710 WOR and the iHeartRadio Network. Tonight we have a very special show. Why? Because thank God we're hopefully, you know, pretty much done with the pandemic. And there are so many financial issues that apply to businesses, individuals, and there's a lot of, you know, misunderstandings or just areas that people really are scrambling for knowledge. And that's why we have our esteemed Mike McIntyre here in studio, along with experts at Burden. In particular, we're speaking with Richard Goldstein, senior principal at Burden LLP, John Fitzgerald, audit partner at Burden LLP, Veronique Horn, senior principal at Burden, and Naya Perlman, tax partner at Burden. So we thank them all for joining on tonight's very important show. I now turn to Naya Perlman. Naya, we've heard a lot in the news that President Biden's proposed tax plan will focus on having big corporations paying their fair share of taxes. However, how would President Biden's proposed tax legislation impact, not however, but just, you know, how would it impact U.S. corporations?
So initially, President Biden campaigned on the idea of raising U.S. corporate tax rates from 21% to 28%, and also imposing a 15% minimum tax on book income of large corporations. So they would have to pay some level of tax, even if there's little or no taxable income because of tax deductions or other tax attributes. And more recently, there's been a bit of a shift, and the Biden administration expressed that they would support a lower U.S. corporate tax rate of 25%. As part of an infrastructure compromise. There's also now talks of a global minimum tax so that there won't be this race to the bottom among countries that cut their rates to luring companies. And the idea here is that it would discourage US companies from moving some or all of their operations overseas because the US would be able to tax that difference under a global minimum tax regime. Now, it's not clear how many countries would support a global minimum tax, but if there was a global agreement, then that could incentivize multinational corporations to invest more in the United States and thereby contribute more to the U.S. tax base.
I now turn to my co-host, Mike McIntyre, with me in studio. Mike, your question for Naya.
Great. Naya, great to see you again, and thanks for your time tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I want to touch on the real estate industry in particular. Your firm does quite a bit of work in that space, as do we on the lending side and the banking side. What are you seeing in the proposed tax plan that may have an impact to the real estate industry here in the U.S.?
Yeah, so for a very long time now, a very popular tax strategy for real estate investors has been the like-kind exchange, which allows real estate owners to defer income taxation when they sell property and buy property that is like-kind within a certain period of time. And we call this the 1031 exchange of real estate. President Biden's tax plan eliminates the like-kind exchange for gains greater than $500,000. So that would be a major change and likely have a far-reaching impact and on the real estate industry, especially coupled with the proposal to change tax rates. In addition, the administration is proposing to disallow what's called the qualified business income deductions for taxpayers making over $400,000. So that could affect real estate owners as well as other business owners.
I now turn to Veronique. Veronique Horn, thank you for joining us here on Mind Your Business. President Biden has proposed to remove the step-up in basis at death. What implications may this have on estates and their beneficiaries?
So the step-up in basis has been part of our federal transfer tax system for over 100 years. The policy behind it is to avoid double taxations on assets at death. So the removal of the step-up would basically mean that those that are subject to the estate tax would have an estate tax on the full fair market value of an asset combined with an income tax based on the asset's appreciation. So Biden's tax proposal falls silent on how exactly this would work. Could there be an income tax at death, or would the beneficiaries of the estate get a carryover basis equivalent to the decedent's basis? So for obvious reasons, an income tax at death would be really detrimental to business owners, especially real estate professionals whose assets often include assets that have been held for decades with little or none or even negative basis, which could definitely have a devastating impact on the family business. You know, this could lead to the forced sale of estate assets in order to satisfy an income tax, and then it could prevent the assets from passing down and continuing the traditional family business. So if I give you an example of this, if there was a family business whose assets had zero basis, under the current rates, the combined estate and income tax rate would be as high as 63.8%. But if you overlay all the other proposed income tax increases and the possible removal of the preferential cap gain tax rate, it could be as high as 88.4%. And if you had assets with negative basis, you could be looking at a tax rate of over 100%. On the other hand, a carryover basis would not be as detrimental because obviously the beneficiaries of the estate would retain the basis that the decedent had in the asset, and then the family business can move on and continue operations as they did before. And then all the assets can continue to pass down to generations without the trigger of an income tax until it's eventually sold. So the one key takeaway about this is that it will dramatically change the way we do estate and gift tax planning as well as income tax planning. And as a result of this, you're going to be having a number of individuals going back to their advisors to revisit their estate plan to make sure they have the sufficient liquidity or the sufficient life insurance or whatnot to actually sustain an income tax at death, or even to sustain a lower basis to the beneficiaries in the future.
Veronique, great to see you. Within the current proposals, there are discussions around removing the preferential tax rates for long-term capital gains and qualified dividends, which obviously is very important to long-term investors. What kind of advice and counsel are you offering your clients today to kind of hedge themselves or to be prepared to reduce their overall tax liabilities in the future?
So currently, the long-term cap gains and qualified dividends rate has a top rate of 23.8%, a 20% income tax, and a 3.8% investment tax. Under the Biden proposal, those taxpayers with income above $1 million will be paying ordinary tax rates, which could be upwards of 43.4%. So what do we want to do today to think about this? If there are certain items that you're going to realize that would get that preferential rate sometime in the future, you may want to think about accelerating that into 2021 so that you can lock in that preferential rate. Things like capital payouts that may occur over a course of a period of time, 3 to 5 years, you may want to go back and negotiate that and see if maybe you can get an acceleration on the capital payout, because often these type of realization events are capital gain type of income. Also, you know, traditionally you think about harvesting losses at year end against capital gains. this year, if it's expected that the preferential cap gain treatment will be removed, you may want to hold on to those losses to realize them in 2022 or thereafter so that they're available to net against higher tax bracket type of capital gains. And really, everyone should be working with their advisors right now to develop a long-term approach and plan, especially those individuals that rely on qualified dividend type of income, because the actual impact on this will result in a reduction of 19.6% of their after-tax cash flow. So those that traditionally are living off of their cash flow from qualified dividend type of income, they really need to relook and see what they can do, how they can rebalance their portfolios so that they have the liquidity to support their lifestyle.
I just want to share an important note that this applies for those listening on the show itself and, of course, for all those watching on YouTube and listening to the podcast at a later date. This episode was recorded during the week of Wednesday, May 26th in 2021. The federal government is tweaking the details on an ongoing basis, and therefore it's very important to contact your local, your particular accountant, lawyer, financial advisor for specific guidance when you make your moves.
If you're installing hardwood or SPC or WPC vinyl flooring, do it with the highest quality products. PC Hardwood Floors, the hardwood flooring leader, has been supplying flooring professionals with the highest quality flooring materials for over 40 years. The knowledgeable team at PC Hardwood Floors will ensure that your materials will arrive at your job site by our own fleet trucks, hassle-free. With 7 locations in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, and next-day delivery, PC Hardwood Floors is the tri-state area's preferred full-service hardwood flooring distributor. Call 866-369-3232 to find out how PC Hardwood Floors can help you find the right hardwood products and finishing supplies for all your flooring projects. For a free consultation, call 866-369-3232. That's 866-369-3232. Or visit us at pchardwoodfloors.com. That's pchardwoodfloors.com.
We're all in a rush these days. We're running to meetings to finish a project. When do we have time to educate ourselves? Enter Business Class, the free daily 60-second video clip featuring advice from C-level executives and business giants such as Beth Comstock, Jeffrey Hazlett, Joe Hart, Shep Hyken, and many more. Follow us on Instagram at Business Class Clips. That's at Business Class Clips on Instagram. Or sign up for our WhatsApp daily broadcast by texting SIGNUP to 718-594-6519 on WhatsApp. Get ready to get ahead.
The time flies. The time flies. When you have great guests, the time flies. I'm here in studio with Michael McIntyre, Senior Vice President of Business and Government Banking at Investors Bank. Earlier in the show, we heard from Richard Goldstein, Senior Principal at Burden LLP, John Fitzgerald, Audit Partner at Burden LLP, Veronique Horn, Senior Principal at Burden LLP, and Naya Perlman, Tax Partner at Burden LLP. I'm going to wrap it up here with Mike, but for those of you that tuned in late, no worries, as the audience knows, by Tuesday morning, the entire episode will be up on various podcasting channels. We're going to try to have the YouTube episode up as well, and you'll be able to hear all the great wisdom and advice shared by Mike McIntyre of Investors Bank and the team at Burden LLP. Mike, you know, thank you again for coming in. Again, it's so rewarding to be talking, now and almost looking at the pandemic in the rearview mirror to a big degree. We've spoken, and your team has shared such amazing advice and perspective. How to survive? Now we're talking about thrive. How to thrive.
Yeah. And you know, for me now, it's just about the velocity of the reopening. It's clear. I mean, I've mentioned this the last year and change, right? You know, escape velocity. When will we have that? And I think we're definitely there now across nearly the entire economy here. you know, in the Northeast for sure. You know, demand is strong, right? Demand for credit remains strong. It's going to remain strong, you know, for the foreseeable future as companies, you know, reposition their balance sheets and get really ready to take advantage of this growth that we're going to have. You know, rates remain low, and so it's a great opportunity to look at how you might want to, you know, refinance some of your obligations. But also, I mean, as we've shared over the last year, and as we talked about tonight, you know, we've continually invested in our technology while also making sure that we deliver it with really great people. And so whether it be payments or being able to do your payroll quicker or find ways to borrow in a much more efficient way, you know, we remain there. And I got to tell you, Zach, as we are basically now, you know, we're still in the unofficial part of summer because it's still it's early June. But I'm looking forward to having you down to Lakewood for a nice kosher hot dog. You know, hey, we're a sponsor of the Jersey Shore Blue Claws, and so my hope
right
is
there
that
in Lakewood.
Right in Lakewood, yeah. And so my hope is, you know, as we get into the summer and after we get through some of these holidays, that we can find time for a nice kosher hot dog over the summer.
Absolutely, I'm game.
All right,
I'm game. Always great getting together. Man, the time flies. But before I let you go, Mike, you always have a great tip to share. Small businesses out there, you know, and entrepreneurs, solo entrepreneurs, perhaps you could just share a quick takeaway.
Yeah, and I tell this to my team every single day. I tell it to our entire retail bank on Monday mornings and to my team on Friday mornings. Every day is a great day to call your customers, call your prospects, not with any intention of selling anything, but just to check in. Because I got to tell you, when I reach out to somebody new or to an existing customer, the objective for the call is to check in, see how they're doing, understand what is their present day challenge or what their issue is, and then offer some advice. And if it leads to an opportunity, great. But I got to tell you, I never tire from reaching out or from calling people. And that is something that I continue to reinforce every day. And I hope that it continues.
You know what's so beautiful about that? Because that's really a hallmark at Investors Bank. And you see it comes from the top. You know, I can't, that's the a work ethic like that from a team is part of the culture, and it starts at the top. And it's so great to have Michael McIntyre in that executive C-suite. Man, wow, the time flies. This wraps up an amazing edition of Mind Your Business. Tune in again next Sunday night for another great edition of Mind Your Business right here on 710 WOR. Have a successful week.
710 WOR and the iHeartRadio Network present Mind Your Business, hosted by the president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis. Founded in 1992, Bottom Line Marketing Group is a strategic, creative, and execution-driven marketing agency, helping businesses by clarifying and promoting their vision, mission, and purpose to support its lead generation and customer retention initiatives to gain market share in their industry. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. for this intriguing radio show as Yitzhak interviews Fortune 500 executives, business leaders, and marketing gurus from a wide variety of business industries. Now, Yitzhak and his guests offer their knowledge and expertise to help you be successful every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.